You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The wellness industry can feel overwhelming. From a revolving door of fads, trends, supplements, power fruits, veggies, healthy eating can just feel complicated. And that can create a feeling of guilt or shame that we're not doing enough in pursuit of our own health. And as I mentioned, this is an industry, right? So that also means that there's a profit that can be made and to be made. And it's important to discuss who determines health and wellness, as well as through what lens. Jessica Wilson is a Sacramento-based registered dietitian and nutritionist who works to dismantle how both the public health system and medical framing of healthy eating and obesity has contributed to disordered eating and self-blame. Jessica has joined us on Insight in the past about her recent book, It's Always Been Ours, Rewriting the Story of Black Women's Bodies. Now she's taking a hard look at ultra-processed foods, which can mean a lot more than what we think, and the stigma that surrounds eating them. Jessica Wilson joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
I would love to just start off with what drew you to a career and passion with nutrition and as a dietitian?
Somewhat related. I'll give you the long story, but quickly. I was born and raised in Sacramento. I was a Kaiser baby over on Morse Avenue. And from an early age, I was always trending at the top of my growth chart, which to a kid who's looking at a growth chart looks like it's winning. But to doctors and everyone around you, it means that you're growing too fast, you're too big. I actually looked through my medical record recently, and at age 6, I was sent to a dietitian. And so in the vein of like self-blame and other things in the intro, I was told from a very young age that my body was wrong. It was too big. And, you know, it was a project it needed fixing. And so from that early age, I both got interested in why this is not okay, but also like I need to be working at this at all times to fix my body. So that led me into dietetics. I was hoping to, you know, help other kids, other black and brown kids, you know, like me, and help process all of this information. Got into eating disorders and really just saw how all of these things that we're taught are healthy are actually, you know, harmful for some people.
Yeah, I mean, I've had these discussions. We just had one this morning when preparing for our show about like the BMI index and how people can be on the higher end, but they're healthy. Mm-hmm. But that can also lead you to feeling that there's something wrong with you.
Absolutely. And you know, up on a spiral of weight loss and weight regain and dieting forever, chronic dieting. And for some people, it's eating disorders.
When it comes to the people that you work with, who are your clients?
Right now, my clients are mostly queer and trans clients. I work remotely at Lion Martin Health Services, a clinic serving mostly queer and trans patients in the Bay Area. Historically, I've spent 10 years in college health. I always say I didn't look to work with people with eating disorders, but you can't work, you know, can't avoid that if you're working in college health. So that's how it came to be.
What have you learned from them over this time?
Really how much it's not an individual's, you know, choice to have an eating disorder. When we're taught, it's like, oh, you just have to ask them to eat more, end of story. And how much the environment, family, cultural messages about what's healthy, you know, to eat and what's not really influence, especially young people, you know, in how they view their bodies, but also, quote, healthy foods.
Yeah, and that's also why you even wrote your own book, It's Always Been Ours, Rewriting the Story of Black Women's Bodies, because I think your work, your personal experience, and the people that you serve, it really shaped your view of what wellness and health is and what it isn't.
Right. People think it's easy. You know, health is the absence of disease, and that's all. But for so many of us, we can both redefine health for ourselves, but also look at the morality assigned to health. And we'll also look at, you know, who goes into the doctor's office and feels comfortable there, who walks in, and who is automatically assumed to be unhealthy. But also when it comes to so many of our it's thought to be, quote, diet-related diseases. The solution to everything is eat less and exercise more. That's the solution to everything, when in fact it's so much more complex than that.
Yeah, and there's so much pressure. I mean, I think about like my own relationship with food as someone that identifies as a woman, as a girl going through, you know, adolescence. Mm-hmm. And it's improved a great deal. But, you know, we're not in an environment that really is conducive to having a healthy relationship with food.
Totally. for so many reasons. One, for women of color, you know, we can be taught that our cultural foods, I see this all the time in college health, white rice is bad. I'm not supposed to eat rice and beans is something that I heard from students all the time. I had one student come to work with me who just wasn't eating dinner because all she knew how to cook was Persian rice, and she wasn't supposed to eat that. So, you know, and she hated quinoa, so she just wasn't eating dinner. And it's just so overwhelming. And these messages that she got about, you know, what her family was cooking, you know, she ended up thinking was unhealthy.
You also have this podcast, Making It Awkward. Mm-hmm. I love the name. What inspired the name?
So for so many years, I have been the only Black person and often definitely the only Black dietitian in many spaces, and especially eating disorder spaces that are predominantly mostly white women, especially because, you know, that is who is historically taught to have, or taught has eating disorders and not anyone else. I have been on the end of many awkward statements. I have been treated in ways that, we'll say, for a better word, are awkward when I end up retelling the stories. Most recently, I was at a trans health conference, and the ways that I was treated both as a dietitian, who apparently should not be at these things, but also as a Black woman who was really ignored. And I share more about that in my podcast for the upcoming month about trans care and BMI. I decided to just make a podcast and tell people, give people back, a view into what it's like to be me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a very good podcast. You know, when we just had a segment about technology, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I look back on, you know, when you shared your experience as a child, you know, and having been referred to a dietitian, now we have like even more. We're inundated more and more and more with what this idea of health or wellness is. And there's an industry attached to that with influencers and things like that. So we see ads, videos, and articles. What do you want us to keep in mind when we're taking in this information?
Yeah, I think that's a great one. And in my book, It's Always Been Ours, chapter 8 is all about me trying to immerse myself in wellness. So I go into the Goop Health Summit, which is Gwyneth Paltrow is there. There's Goopies who are just fans. We're eating dust. We're drinking collagen and a bunch of other wild things, and how expensive, of course, it was. And so really, yes, who is making money from selling literal dusts to you, and who is like trying to write the narratives of what health and wellness is, which is often, yes, like you said, influencers.
And a lot of times when I see these ads, I mean, it's like there's an equity component to this.
Yes.
They're very expensive.
Yes.
Very expensive. And you don't know if they even work.
Right.
Right? Because like next week it can be something else.
Absolutely. I think that's really, you know, astute of you to recognize that it's definitely in cycles. What's healthy one week is not healthy the next. And even if we look at, you know, what are thought to be healthy foods, we went through a long stretch of like really pushing plant-based eating patterns, which, you know, for a lot of people, that's oat milk instead of regular milk or like vegan cheese, et cetera. But now, you know, with the, I would say last 6 months of really pushing the narrative of ultra-processed foods are terrible for us, you know, that includes a lot of those, you know, meat alternatives that we were told that we should be eating.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll get to that in just a moment. What I learned from you is also that how like health is such a broad term. It means something completely different for one person compared to another. Mm-hmm. When you have a client, how do you approach consulting a client, you know, and kind of to lead them down a healthy path that's right for them?
Yes, in school, we were always told the formulaic, you know, they come in, we say this, they leave. But it's so much more that first, you know, interaction is just tell me about indeed your family, your relationship with food. What are your cultural foods? What are your beliefs about foods? And then, you know, what are your individual goals for, you know, your health, but also like how you're just able to be in this world? Are you looking for these very specific recommendations, or are you just looking, you know, to indeed improve that relationship with food?
Because I think there's also the argument that if you are, you know, being shaped by these ads and these articles and these videos, yes, you're striving for health, but maybe you don't have a healthy relationship with with food, even when you're striving to be healthy.
Absolutely. So much of it, you know, they introduced recently the term orthorexia, which is just basically the over-obsession with healthy eating, cutting so many things out of our diet that are, you know, quote unhealthy. And absolutely the path that that leaves us on, which can be very disordered.
And it just takes out the joy of eating.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
You know, food is fuel, and I get that.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, food is also pleasurable. It's also
right.
cultural. It's communal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so much more than just fuel.
Yes. And I think that is something that is, you know, always been there, but perhaps more right now is the like purity of, you know, only eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full and only eating the best things for us. And that anybody who deviates outside of those were thought to be, you know, hedonistic or just like eating emotionally and just, you know, but yes, like there is so much pleasure in food and we're not taught that that's okay.
You know, you're among, you know, dietitians and nutritionists who are taking a critical eye at what we've long been told about is health and what is wellness. I mean, is this a growing group of individuals like yourself that are kind of looking at like with a critical eye, what is healthy and how we should go about achieving that?
Yeah, I would say in 2019, Sabrina String's book, Fearing the Black Body, really opened up the ways that centuries have gone into crafting what is a healthy body. And she connected anti-fatness to anti-blackness and just basically the ways that what we have told is healthy has been shaped by what we are trying to achieve, which is ultimately like thinness and purity and whiteness for folks of color. And so with that, I think a lot of people have become more aware. People follow me on Instagram and are engaging in these conversations about the ways that we've been told we should have a good and right body.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Jessica Wilson, a Sacramento-based registered dietitian and nutritionist, about ultra-processed foods and the stigma that surrounds eating them. So when did you start looking into ultra-processed foods?
When Dr. Chris Van Tulleken's book came out this year, I saw wall-to-wall coverage of ultra-processed foods, something that we really hadn't been focusing so much on in the regular news. And his like claim to fame was that he went on an ultra-processed food diet that was 80% ultra-processed foods mm-hmm. for a month, and how terrible he felt, all the weight that he gained. He was more anxious, not looking like basically he wanted to, and all of these biometric measures, you know, were different at the end of that month. And I am always curious about things that are thought to be universal. One person did one thing and therefore it's great for everyone, especially as a dietitian. And I, you know, see people trying to achieve whatever, you know, the influencer says. So I was wondering if indeed that was true across the board.
Yeah. When I think about ultra processed foods, I mean, I think about, you know, like, I don't know, like Doritos or Kraft mac
right.
and cheese, but it's so much more. And also you have an episode about this. I mean, it's also hard to define. So how do you come to define an ultra processed food?
Well, I think that's part of the problem, right? So in the like four tiers of what are supposed to be ultra processed foods, the ultra processed food is tier four and is supposed to be this really broad category that has, you know, deleterious additives, and it's going to be those Doritos and mac and cheese. But if we really dig down into it, it's going to be, again, like oat milk. It's supposed to be things that are like ready to eat, but like ready to eat apple pie from Whole Foods versus the one I make. It's just this really broad, what are we talking about? So I typically don't identify ultra processed foods for me because the categories themselves and definitions are so squiggly. It's not really clear to find.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions about ultra-processed foods that you encountered and learned about?
Honestly, that they're all unquote unhealthy. So if we go and look at like chicken sausages, like any additive is supposed to be, you know, anything that's not in our grandmother's cabinet, right? Or anything that we wouldn't have in our cabinet is supposed to be like a bad thing. But that's going to include xanthan gum in any gluten-free product. So people who just can't eat regular bread are consuming all of these additives all the time. A lot of people will say added sugar is, you know, an additive, and that is just naturally going to be in a lot of things with recipes. So it's thought to be, you know, like food dyes and all of these like scary things, but just so much of what we consume on a daily basis, say like, again, those chicken sausages, which might have an additive, are going to be a normal part of our diet.
And imagine like a veggie burger, too.
Right. Absolutely. All of those, you know, plant-based alternatives. Soy riso was one that really people got passionate about, loving it from Trader Joe's. I hadn't tried it. I did. People were very excited. Those type of things are supposed to be in this unhealthy category that we're never supposed to eat.
You know, when we look at it through that lens about this this idea that that they're inherently bad, who does that ultimately harm?
So many of us. One that I don't want to forget is the dynamics that come into play when we're supposed to, you know, start and cook everything from scratch and either pay for, you know, homemade bread from my bakery every, you know, few days because it spoils, or we're supposed to be doing that in the kitchen. And I just want to bring in always the gender dynamics in our society. If somebody is supposed to be cooking everything from scratch and never getting anything that's processed too, that's typically going to fall on. But also, right, anybody who doesn't have time.
Which is a lot of us.
Right. And I think that's most of us in our society. It's just...
And sometimes convenience is good for your mental health, you know, and not feeling overly stressed that on top of an already busy day.
Yeah. Decision fatigue and overwhelm are like... very true for all of us. Even myself, who went to, you know, working at the office to working at home, I thought, oh, it'll be so easy. You know, I have all this time. I don't have to think so much about planning. No, like at the end of the day, I still can't make those decisions. And if I were to cook something from scratch, it just is not going to happen.
And it depends on, you know, I just think about, you know, since the pandemic, food insecurity is a huge issue mm-hmm. in from one community yeah. to the next. Not everyone has a kitchen, mm-hmm. right? I mean, not everyone has access to quote unquote healthy, you know, unadulterated food, like
right.
fruits and veggies and things like mm-hmm. that. And so by putting the onus on some of the most vulnerable individuals to eat healthy, mm-hmm. I mean, that doesn't seem like a compassionate way to achieve health or wellness.
Right. And yes, the penalizing and the pathologizing and the problematizing of any type of processed food, right, is going to disproportionately target those who don't have access to food. We're talking about most, you know, school lunches or kids that have to have free and reduced meals. And, you know, that is such a like large swath of the population that, you know, also we come in and we'll say again, like they're just eating unhealthy and it's all about individual responsibility and personal choice. And, you know, if only they were making these different choices, you know, things would be better. And if I were to spend the money I would spend, you know, on a processed meal, on a singular head of lettuce or something like that, you know, that's actually not enough food. So like where, you know, is the role of, you know, policy cities in working on, you know, food apartheid mm-hmm. and food deserts.
So you also went on a 30-day challenge
yes.
of eating mostly ultra-processed foods mm-hmm. from your diet. What did you learn?
So first I had to actually define it because, again, like, what is an ultra-processed food? So I sat down with Amy Fletcher, a food process manager at UC Davis, to come up with my own guidelines. I decided that things had to have at least 5 ingredients and 1 additive, and that could be, you know, xanthan gum, like I already mentioned, or anything that wasn't going to be found in my cabinet. And I truly was surprised that I felt better after 2 weeks. But I thought the assumption was going to be I was going to feel the same. Like I was already, you know, my spouse is allergic to dairy, so we already have a bunch of, you know, additives in the house. I was just going to feel the same. And what ended up happening was that at week 2, I was less anxious, which kind of sounds sensational and weird. And like I'm going and trying to do the exact opposite. But I asked my spouse, who, you know, is going to be the arbiter of what is true, if I was any different. And she said that I was, you know, way less tired in the evenings and not complaining a bunch about having to do like the dishes and my chores. And I wasn't sleeping in the afternoon, which is something, you know, that I thought was natural. Like regular people just get sleepy in the afternoon with this like lull in energy. But I wasn't. And I wasn't as hungry as often. And truly, I just was not expecting that.
You know, if there is someone listening to this with some skepticism,
yeah.
what do you want them to keep in mind?
Right. So everything is individual. So what happened to Chris Van Tulleken, I absolutely believe. I truly believe that just because I was eating more, so eating was easier, so I ate more. And that is supposed to be a bad thing. But it turns out in my case, I just wasn't eating.
Give you the energy.
Yeah, I wasn't eating enough. I wasn't putting in the effort to eat food. So also my narrative about myself was I was always hungry and that was just me. But it turns out I was just always hungry. So when I started eating more food, I felt better, which is really consistent with what I work with so many of my clients on. Those who are food insecure, those who just aren't having time. Like, let's get you the energy that you need.
In the last minute or two, we have. I mean, I want to acknowledge tomorrow is Halloween. So it's a week, you know, where there's a lot of candy. How do you recommend kind of cultivating a healthy relationship with sweets and candy?
Yeah, that one, a lot of people expect me to say, like, keep candy away from kids or moderate it, or, you know, if you don't give it to them, they won't develop a taste for it. And in my experience, the opposite is true, that, you know, once we're like creating a scarcity mindset around food or like making it a very special thing, especially with candy, kids are going to act differently. They are going to, you know, oftentimes hoard it. They're going to eat it all in one setting. You know, you might see that, you know, your kids just can't stop eating it. It's because they haven't learned to have like a regular amount of candy or a regular amount of dessert. So giving them more or more access to it, not necessarily larger quantities, can help them just regulate their eating like any other food.
Not making it as big of a deal as as it is.
As soon as it's special, as soon as it like holds power over kids, and as soon as they're not able to understand that it's going to be there, kids tend to go overboard.
And that goes well beyond children. that can go into adults, so, myself included, as well. I guess as a final thought, for those of us who are not nutritionists, we're not dietitians, but we do think about how to be healthy and whatever that means to us. Mm-hmm. What do you hope we take away from this conversation?
I hope that people generally add in or are looking at meals as having all of the components. So it's not, you know, a restrictive amount. There's fruits and vegetables, there's protein, there's carbohydrates, and however we're getting them, we're doing a great job. We're human. You know, we don't have endless resources. How can we have compassion for ourselves and what we're able to do in that moment?
Jessica, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jessica Wilson is a Sacramento-based registered dietitian and nutritionist talking about ultra-processed foods and the stigma that surrounds eating them. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.